questions from the floor? All right, the board has asked if OA's co-founder Roseanne would be so kind to discuss the issue of anonymity with you today, and she's pleased to be here, and we're very pleased to have her here with us. Please join me in welcoming Roseanne. Thank you, everybody. Good morning, my caring, loving friends, and welcome to the Global Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous. My name is Roseanne, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Next Saturday, I will have been coming back to OA meetings for 41 years and 4 months. I have been abstaining from compulsive overeating for 14 years, 6 months, and 8 days. I'm 5 feet tall, and I'm maintaining a 50-pound weight loss. Before I begin this morning's address, I want to thank all of you, for your love and support during the last 18 months. As you all know, my husband of nearly 44 years, Marvin, died on November 11, 1999. Although I had many severe emotional and health reactions to his passing, I did not binge, nor did I gain any weight. Last September, I had breast cancer surgery, followed by 7 weeks of radiation treatments. Again, I had serious emotional and physical reactions to the surgery and treatments. Above all, I held fast to my belief that abstinence is the most important thing in my life, without exception. With the support of God, along with my friends and family, and by working the 12 steps, I learned once more that it is not necessary to relapse into compulsive overeating and gain a lot of weight, no matter what happens in life. Now, let's move on to anonymity, the subject of my talk to you this morning. This is a word that more than any other causes great confusion in our fellowship. The word anonymous comes from the Greek, and it means without a name. Where did our idea of anonymity come from? In AA Comes of Age, Bill W., AA's co-founder, states, "In the beginning, anonymity was not born of confidence. It was a child of our early fears. Our first nameless groups of alcoholics were secret societies. Although we were no longer drinking, we still thought we had to hide from public distrust and contempt. AA's spiritual concept of anonymity was yet to be developed. By the time Joe and I were starting OA, the notion of a secret society for compulsive overeaters no longer applied. Although I took the last name of our new little fellowship for AA, I had absolutely no idea what the word anonymous really meant or how important traditions 11 and 12 would become to me and to our newborn fellowship. Let's begin by making clear the difference between gossip and anonymity. According to the dictionary, gossip is idle talk or rumor about the personal or private affairs of others. Within the framework of OA's familiar idioms, we call that broken anonymity. But the concept of anonymity has a far deeper, more spiritual presence in our lives than merely not gossiping about others. The quality of our recovery depends upon understanding what anonymity means to each of us and how it enables us to change. With that in mind, let's start with general ideas and work back to specifics. To be anonymous in OA means to be one among many, not standing out in the crowd. It means we must accept ourselves as no better and no worse than our fellows. This acceptance places us in a state of humility. It makes us teachable, ready to learn about the principles embodied in our steps and traditions, those principles which we must ultimately place before the personalities in our lives. For example, if your group conscience has voted that anyone coming in late may not share at that meeting, then by raising your hand to speak if you arrived late, you are making yourself someone special, above the decision of the group. If your meeting members have chosen to use a 3-minute timer to limit pitches so everyone has a chance to participate, then by refusing to stop talking when the timer rings, you are saying, "I don't need to abide by your rules. I'm more important than the rest of you." I know this can be difficult to understand, so let me say it another way. As compulsive overeaters, we spent most of our lives feeling different. Our ego swung from inflation to deflation. Sometimes we felt inferior to other people, afraid to take a stand for fear of rejection. Other times we felt superior, often insisting, my way is the only way. Is there anyone here who hasn't wavered between these feelings? Many of our group problems stem from these conflicting emotions. We all know people who try to control meetings. We also know others who are unable to object to that control. And actually, many of us, including myself, have been in both positions during our time in OA. As Bill W. said, the spiritual substance of anonymity is sacrifice. Gradually, we in OA learn to sacrifice, to submerge our egos for the good of the group. Remember that phrase, submerge our egos for the good of the group. I know it's hard, but we must do this if OA is to survive and we're to recover. Moving on to another confusing aspect of anonymity. How do we treat our fellowship at the public level? And again, AA becomes our teacher. In January 1954, Yale University wrote to Bill W., offering him an honorary degree. The AA Grapevine has published the moving series of letters between Bill and the university. Bill declined the honor for himself, citing the tradition of personal anonymity and no personal levels, personal honors at the public level as AA's protective shield. However, in one of the last letters in that series, Bill set an example and clarified confusion for all of us when he wrote, though it might be a novel departure, I'm wondering if the Yale Corporation would consider giving AA itself the entire citation, omitting the degree to me. In such event, I will gladly appear at any time on behalf of our society. For those members who believe OA itself should remain anonymous, Bill's statement should resolve any misunderstanding. Ask yourselves, how can we be a program of attraction if we hide OA's light under the cloak of public anonymity so that other compulsive overeaters don't even know we exist? There's nothing wrong with placing the name Overeaters Anonymous with your local group or intergroup's telephone number in the public service listing of your community newspaper or the announcements of your local radio and television stations. Remember, Tradition 11 talks about maintaining personal anonymity. It says nothing about the anonymity of the fellowship as a whole. And now that we've entered the realm of public media, let's explore related issues a little further. The welfare of Overeaters Anonymous, like that of AA, depends upon a unanimous application of the principles of anonymity. It must be for all of us, with no exceptions. Oh, but you may protest, I have nothing to hide. TV is a visual medium, and newcomers will be attracted by my weight loss. And besides, it won't hurt my program. I've been maintaining for years, and I don't care who knows I'm a member. All of this may be true, but what if other members come forward and follow your example? Suppose they begin competing for publicity and financial payment. And what of the anonymity breaker who may return to compulsive overeating and gain weight? People who identify themselves as OA members in the public media are quite naturally seen as spokespersons for our program. And should they slip, the public's impression of OA would come from the noisy failures rather than the quiet successes. Oh, yes, you may say, but even though I showed my face as an OA member during that television interview as an OA member, I didn't use my last name. I thought that was enough. This is a common misconception. If you expect to be interviewed for a newspaper story or a radio or TV broadcast, ask yourself, do I intend to say I'm an OA member? If you do, the answer is clear. No faces, no last names. If you do not call yourself an OA member, even if you say you're a compulsive overeater, then you are free to use your full name and have your face appear on camera or in the newspaper. These guidelines also apply to OA writers. If you, and me, as a writer, identify yourself as an OA member, then your byline can be 1, first name and last initial, 2, anonymous, in quotes, or 3, an assumed name, making sure that a statement to that effect appears. Of course, no pictures of you can be used in the book, the newspaper, or today on the internet. If you say you are a compulsive overeater and don't reveal your OA membership, then you can use your full name, with or without your picture. Have I made myself clear on this subject? The key is not whether you say you are a compulsive overeater, but whether you identify yourself as a member of Overeaters Anonymous. Now, let's address next the initial confusion, not in the public realm, but within our fellowship. Many members ask, am I required to reveal my last name within the fellowship? For each of us, the choice is ours. No member is required to reveal anything, not even a first name. For professional reasons, many people prefer to withhold their last names. Others don't want their families or their neighbors to discover their OA membership. And whatever the reason, their wish to be anonymous, even when it is not necessary, must be respected. On the other hand, many of you say, if I use my last name at a meeting, I'm violating the traditions. This is a total misunderstanding of Tradition 11. Let's read that tradition together. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. Did you hear that phrase? Public media. It doesn't say anything about groups, meetings, or even person to person. If you want to use your last name in private, in your group, at your intergroup or region meetings, or even today at World Service Conference, then go ahead and use it. There are times when using our full names actually protects our anonymity. Just use your common sense and think about it. For example, it is common practice all over the world to use first and last names in correspondence or package delivery systems. If something is addressed to Mary T. or John D. or Roseanne S., then anyone handling such mail would have cause to wonder, is this person in a 12-step program? And if you live where there are many mailboxes for your complex, how is the mail person supposed to know which Mary T. or John D. that letter is meant for? Confusion about whether or not to use full names also arises when an OA member is in the hospital or on vacation. If we expect fellow members to write or call, we need to give them our full names. It's not realistic to assume that mail clerks or telephone operators are mind readers, but they will be able to locate us by our first name and last initial. Remember, everybody, we are talking about you. You are free to use your last name privately, right, to reveal anyone else's last name without his or her permission. Let's revisit the phrase in the beginning of Tradition 11, attraction rather than promotion. I have heard members say, oh goodness, I can't tell anyone I'm in OA. That would be promotion. I have to wait until they come up to me and ask me how I've lost weight. Well, let's learn from Bill Wilson's account on pages 65 and 66 of AA Comes of Age. Bill, for those of you who read it and remember, had been in Akron, Ohio on business. That Saturday night, Mother's Day Eve of 1935, he was pacing up and down in the lobby of the Mayflower Hotel, rationalizing that he could go into the bar, drink some ginger ale, and scrape up an acquaintance. Bill says, then I panicked. I remembered that in trying to help other people, I had stayed sober myself. And I thought, you need another alcoholic just as much as he needs you. He called a phone number on the church directory in the lobby, eventually was led to Henrietta Sieberling's daughter-in-law, and according to Bill, next afternoon at 5 o'clock, that wonderful couple, Dr. Bob and Ann, stood at Henrietta's open door. That was the man who was to be my partner and founder of Akron's group number one. According to Dr. Bob's story in the AA Big Book, the good doctor says, he, meaning Bill, he was the first living human with whom I had ever talked who knew what he was talking about in regard to alcoholism from actual experience. If Bill had just sat in the lobby that night, waiting for someone to rush up to him and ask him how he got sober, none of us would be here today. The same goes for you and me. Don't just stand there like a statue. waiting for someone to ask you how you lost weight, stopped throwing up, or recovered from anorexia. Tell your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers, and anyone else you want about what the OA program has done for you. Letting others know about our recovery in OA, it's a real chance to be an attraction for a still suffering compulsive overeater. Let's not hide the shining light of our recovery under the dark misunderstandings of the words attraction, promotion, and anonymous. Finally, let's talk about our promise of privacy. For most of us, OA is our haven, a place where we can unburden our hearts and begin to trust other human beings. Remember that word I defined at the beginning of this address, gossip? Sometimes, without meaning to be cruel, one member may say to another, "Well, I'm not breaking her anonymity because she said it at a meeting." Or, "This isn't breaking anonymity because it's just between us." Other times, a person who is well-known locally or even nationally appears at a meeting. Always, like other humans, are impressed by prominent people. "Did you hear who was at the meeting last night?" one member will whisper to another. And as a result, personal privacy is lost. Early in our OA lives, we learn that at a private level, we may tell anyone anything we wish about ourselves, including the fact that we are OA members. But the right to discuss other members is not ours. That is what makes OA so splendid and so special in an unsettled world. Here we find sanctuary from gossip, competitiveness, and the hero worship that characterize much of our society. Here we are protected by the principles embodied in our remarkable program, the foundation of which is anonymity. And that brings me full circle, back to the concepts I described at the beginning of this talk, those concepts which are embodied in Tradition 12. As we've learned from the early AAs, ego reduction at depth is necessary for recovery. We come to see that we must submerge our ego for the good of the group and blend with the rest of humanity for our own sake and the preservation of OA as a whole. As we continue to grow in OA, we lose our desire for prestige. We take no credit for our recovery. Rather, we accept responsibility for our actions, looking only at our own faults and taking no one's inventory but our own. In the outside world, you and I might be someone very special. Perhaps we've accomplished a lot, created something wonderful, helped other people, and lived a loving life. But here in OA, we must learn to let go of the idea of being unusual or extraordinary. We must clearly understand the fundamental meaning of anonymity that the early AAs and their mentors have taught us. We are one with our fellows, submerging our egos for the good of the group. In Overeaters Anonymous, the feeling that I am nothing special is of tremendous value in maintaining abstinence. It fosters humility and thus guards against reemergence of that blind self-will that leads to the compulsion to overeat. This kind of anonymity is truly our most precious possession. Cherish it. Protect it. Understand it. Because your life depends upon practicing the spiritual essence of anonymity, and my life depends upon it too. Thank you.